And now I would like to introduce our main speaker for this evening, Bex W. from San Diego.
It's a new last name. It's very exciting. My name is Bex W., and I am an alcoholic. Hi. First of all, welcome to the record-breaking newcomers in the house. Can you give it up? Awesome. No pressure. And then I also want to congratulate all the time. It's 36 years of sobriety with all just three people. That's incredible. So congratulations to the token takers, and thank you for your honesty. That's what I need in my sobriety today. And thanks for my fam for coming out, all my DO fam in the house. That was my home group. It's called Drunks Only. We like to call it DO. It meets every single day at noon, and that is where I know people. I have a family there. I have a commitment there. It just kicked my butt the other night. And I also, that reminds me, because I didn't cuss, I want to thank Blythe for asking me to speak tonight. It's funny, my family from DO is going to think this is funny. She asked me because she knows that I respect the tradition of not cussing at the podium. So let's hope that goes over. I really do like to respect the traditions because I take this program very seriously. It saved my life, and I didn't even think I had a life worth saving when I got here. So how it started was, I guess I'll just say, like, my dad was a alcoholic, pretty functioning alcoholic. My mom's, like, super doormat. Like, she has a cape with the word doormat on it. She's super good at that. And all I remember, because they got separated when I was 9, I was pretty young. All I remember is, like, the couple of times, like, he wasn't allowed to drink in the house, so it was sort of pretty, like, I didn't know what was wrong with Daddy. I just knew, like, a lot of Saturday mornings I would come out, and, like, he was like a jungle gym of Dad on the floor because he, like, didn't make it to the bed. He, like, passed out in the living room. But he, like, made it home drunk. He just passed out. And so, yeah, I remember that. And then I just remember a couple of times him coming home and being really rough, like hugging me where I was like choking, and it was very terrifying. And he was a teddy bear otherwise. But so that's my fam. And then they got divorced when I was 9. And because I was the youngest, I went with my mom and the new guy, who, because my mom didn't think she had, she has a long story too, but she didn't have skills or like a way to keep a roof over our head, but she knew she needed to leave my dad because of his alcoholism and the way he was treating her. She found it was like jumping out of the frying pan into the fire. She found a guy who doesn't drink but was, in my opinion, way worse. And I got the brunt of it because I was the youngest. So I got from an early age that what my experience and what my truth was not valid. And I spent a very long time drinking and doing other outside issues called drugs. I did a lot of those. It's so much part of my story. I can just say that I did drugs alcoholically, and y'all can't kick me out. So I lived life alcoholically, you know, like I don't like need to find a new place and then just like look a couple of like I obsess and don't eat until like I find a place. Like I live life alcoholically. So I completely relate. And so I got to be raised by my mom and my new stepdad, and things that were not okay with me, I would look to my mom and she would be like, yeah, it's great, you know. And so I got like a huge resentment, and it was what fueled my discomfort until I found at once that comfort that it was actually my first drink wasn't a drink, it was an outside issue, but the feeling of not being sober was what I chased after, no matter what the substance was. And there was times where I'd quit one and do something else, or quit one and drink, and I thought, like, oh, I can control it because I can quit. But really, I was just like a little whack-a-mole, just like, I'll quit this, and then this pops up. And a lot of it in my head, I was like, oh, I quit for like 6 months. But really, it was like 3 weeks, but it felt like 6 months. And then I looked at the calendar and was like, oh, wow, that's crazy. But so my first experience with not being sober was at a rave, because I'm old, and it was super fun, because I'm a dancer, and so I got to dance all night not be hungry, like feel this euphoric feeling with a bunch of people who are just happy as shit. Oh, dang it. Ah, sorry, I failed you. It's all right, I'm human. But that same night, I also had like that resentment and like all the negative stuff that I had been penting up for so long, and I like wanted to jump out of the window. And this was like back when raves were like underground. They were like in this abandoned warehouse downtown where it was like the 12th floor, you know, and I wanted to jump out. There was no windows, there was no glass, it was an abandoned building. And my friends pulled me back in. I was in so much spiritual pain. I like burnt a cigarette in my hand, and I just that negative stuff needed to be released. And that is not why I drink. I drink because I'm an alcoholic. And I don't just like the effect produced by alcohol. I love it. I love it more than I love my parents. I love it more than I love my grandma. I love it more than I love my own life. And it's such a trip that you said that you thought you were going to die at 22, because that was legit my expiration date. And so I prided myself on just like, I don't have to invest in a future I'm not going to see. I'm just going to live fast and enjoy my life until I'm 22. And then I got sober at 22, so God has a sense of humor. I did sort of die, but it was the good kind. So I'm trying to keep track so I can get to the what it was like and what happened and all that. So what else was it like? I was a late bloomer and an early finisher. I started my journey when I was 18. I was a very goody two-shoes in school because I went to an art school, and I think that saved my life. I was very dedicated to the arts, and I never thought like, oh, I don't want to waste my time with like that. I'm like into this, until I took physically the substance into my body, and then the allergy happened, and the obsession of the mind and the sickness of my spirit was like, oh, I need this all the time whenever I can get it. So I did that. I jumped around from substance to substance with various excuses, one being I was a full-time college student and I was going to work full-time because we're overachievers in my family, and I needed it to stay up and study, and then it backfired, and I would sleep through, like, midterms, because I'd stayed up three nights to study, and then I just slept through the frickin' midterms, so that's my unmanageability, and then I graduated to a substance that everyone's scared of, and I just remember college got in the way of my heroin use, I'll say it. So I quit school, and I really chased the obsession that I could use heroin like a lady, and I couldn't. But my using, I equate it to like alcoholics who are binge drinkers. Like, I'm gonna quit, and I would always quit and go through such physical pain to not be physically dependent on this substance. And then as soon as it was cleared from my body, I needed it again because I could not stand the reality, the sting, I called it, of reality. And I remember telling my older sister that I was getting into this substance, and she got really scared, and she told my family, and they had an intervention on me, like in the TV, like people all around me. It was very weird to like think I was going over to my family's house to have a sleepover and then wake up and like everyone's sitting there and some strange man and they're reading me letters. I don't remember any of it. I just remembered I said yes to whatever they asked me to do to get them off my back so that I could still drink and do other things. So it was like, I'll be the actor. And this substance made me a terrible actor. I couldn't cover things. And that's what got me accelerated into being busted, basically. I did not come to Alcoholics Anonymous voluntarily. I got caught. I was staying with my dad because I thought, it says no human power could relieve us of our alcoholism, be that be. And I thought my dad could relieve me. I thought if I stay with my dad, if I tell him when I have my work shifts, if I give him my car keys when I'm not working, if I give him my tip money, I can stay away from it. And I still had the obsession to drink. Let me just make that very clear. That's how I relate. I am an alcoholic because I have the obsession. If I could just drink, all the other stuff is the problem. Like, alcohol's my solution. I need something. I can't handle sobriety. And so this substance. I like convinced the dealer to like come to my house, even though my dad's condo, my window looks out at the cop station. Like, we share a fucking parking lot. Oh my God, I'm so failing. It's gonna be a thing. You should give me like a dollar jar so like we can pay rent tonight. Yeah. Okay, that's $2. We'll keep it up. So I convinced him to come to my dad's condo with the like cops right there. Like, I'm really smooth when I need my substance. So he came, I got super loaded, and the morning after, I came to, my dad is trying to hand me the phone saying my cousin, who was also a heroin addict who went to AA and got sober and has been bugging me, so freaking annoying. Like, let's go to a meeting. You need to go to a meeting. And I was like, yeah, tomorrow. That's a great idea, tomorrow. It was always a really good idea for tomorrow. And he called my dad because he had seen me at something and I looked real sucked up. And like, I was like tweezing hairs that were underneath the skin. Like, I didn't look good. And because, you know, you got to do other substances with your substances and it makes you see things. So my cousin was on the phone, and thank God he was a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, because my dad handed me the phone. I sat up. I, like, came to, sat up, knew what was up, because I had, like, knotted off on my rig. The needle was open, like, the spoon with the freaking brown-ass heroin. Sorry, brown hair, $3. Brown heroin. And I was like, it's pudding! Like, that was the first thing out of my mouth, was like, lie, cover it. And obviously not. But, you know, till the end, I'm going to kick and scream. And my, thank God for him being a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous, because he understood that I had no choice. All of the things that I did to try and not pick up or try to just drink, it didn't work, and he knew that I didn't have a choice. And he explained that to my dad, because my dad was ready to kick me out. I would have had nowhere to go. And he convinced my dad to put me into a treatment center. Now, a treatment center is outside issue. So, like, you don't have to go to a treatment center. You can straight up just come to AA. But my story includes going to 1111 Island Detox, which is not there anymore, but it was the drunk tank. It was real glamorous. And I fit right in. I fit right in. And the H&I panel, hospitals and institutions, came into that recovery treatment center, and they brought me hope, and they brought me an understanding of what alcoholism is, and I caught alcoholism. When I was put into that treatment center, I was pissed. I was, like, devastated. I was pitifully and incomprehensibly demoralized because I was a dancer, and I had just gotten a solo. I was I don't even know what it's called. It doesn't matter. I had a solo in the dance show, the two-hour, like, full-length production that we were doing, and my family all had tickets, and it was that weekend, and I was in treatment. And they had to, like, I don't know what they did. They probably had to, like, teach somebody else. But that was awful for me. But there was this little part inside of me that was relieved. And thank God I stayed long enough to listen and to catch alcoholism. It's crazy. I feel like this program is seconds and inches sometimes. And that, the way I got sober, is like what I call like those like little miracles, where I had gotten busted. My cousin's on the phone. He's telling my dad, like, she can't help it. She needs to go to treatment. And my dad's like, tell me what to do. So he calls like the treatment center, detox. And I don't know if you know this, but you're supposed to call yourself. Like, if your family calls for you, they're like, that person's not willing. You need to go to Al-Anon, you know. But instead, he handed me, like, my cousin was like, hand her the phone. I'm bawling because I'm busted. And this lady on the other end thinks I am so desperate to get sober. And she's like, come on down, girl. We'll give you a bed today. Because she thought I was, like, desperate to get sober. God has such a sense of humor. At least my God does. So that was a huge blessing. I went down there. It was kind of weird the first day because my dealer was there. And I was like, oh, God, this is weird. Luckily, he didn't stick around. He left. And now he's got, like, prison tats and stuff. It's crazy. But I stayed. And I got enough clarity to listen and to hear. This is the big part for me, because a lot of people try to scare me sober. They were like, if you don't quit, you're going to die. And I was like, I don't care. You know, like, I didn't, obviously, I don't care. That's why I'm doing what I'm doing. I hope to die drunk. I drink to black out. I do heroin to, like, and I would go to sleep. And you're not supposed to do that because it's like a sedative. So anyway, I couldn't be scared into sobriety. But what you guys taught me, what that meeting taught me, is about alcoholism, and that it is a disease. It's chronic. It's not going to go away, and that it gets worse, never better. That more about alcoholism is what I needed to hear for something to click, for me to go, oh my God, if I keep on going the way I'm going, like, I looked at my pattern, and yes, there were moments of control that I had, but they were always followed by more just craziness, and they got fewer and fewer and further between. And if I really looked at the big picture, alcoholism just focuses on that little bit that can, like, make me in denial and make me go, I can do it, I can do it. But if I really looked at the big picture, I saw that it was just going to get worse, and I was probably going to survive. And I was like, dude, I do not want to be that, like, 40-year-old alcoholic, like, with nothing going on for them, no family and stuff. And honestly, when I was in that treatment center, there was a dude who was also a heroin addict who went to AA, got sober, made a lot of friends like I have here, like supportive family, like gut level honesty, like fam, like I will cry with them and hold their hand. And they came in and I saw the relationship they had with this guy, and they were like, where'd you go, man? And he went out. He was young like me, because I was 22. He went out and just drank and jacked up his life. And I was like, that's my yet. Thank God that that example was there for me, because I feel like there's, like, smart people, like, learn from their mistakes, but wise people can learn from others. And if you're wise enough to stay here, you can learn from other people's mistakes, and you don't have to go back out. There are so many people who share my yets as a young alcoholic who, honestly, the scariest part about my bottom is that I can still go, it wasn't that bad. Like, I told my sponsor, you know, it wasn't that bad. I only had an alcoholic career for 4 years. I didn't really have a whole lot of time to accrue anything to lose it. I just didn't ever accrue it. So for me to see my yet, I was like, this is an opportunity. I see it. I see if I push this off till tomorrow, tomorrow's not going to come. Like, this is it. This is my chance. This is my second. This is my inch that I was willing. I just had this desperation where I was like, I have to have this. And you also gave me hope. You guys came in and you talked about, like, living life and, like, going out and, like, surfing, going to the beach, going to sober parties, having game nights. Actually, they didn't share that, but I do that. It's so fun. Girl. But like, I realized that I totally relate. Like, I had fun in the beginning. I was going to raves. I was drinking and driving on acid. Who does that? Like, the lanes were doing that. It was crazy. I would go to work on acid. I worked at, I don't know if you guys know, Farrell's Ice Cream Parlor. That mess is crazy town. Can you imagine that on acid? Like, I was trying to remember orders and stuff. It was hard. But anyway, it was crazy. I don't even know where I was going. See, ADD is a thing. I have it. But I can stay sober anyway. Where the hell was I? I don't know. Farrell's. But before that, four years sober, living sober. Oh, having fun in sobriety was really important to me as a young person. Like, I kind of, like, understood that I needed to, like, throw away my cool card, because you guys are not cool. I'm sorry. It was like, oh my God, I'm going to have to get sober and learn how to knit. Because that's literally what I thought I needed to do here. But then I got, like, I got out of treatment, and my cousin's girlfriend, who was also sober, like, took me around with her. Like, I didn't go to a treatment center after that. Like, I just did the recovery home of dad and, like, this woman in AA who just took me everywhere with her, because I didn't have anything going. Like, I didn't have my job anymore and all that. So I, like, went with her to her band, her sober band practice. And she was, like, playing drums even though she was a bassist, and she hated it because she didn't like not being good at something, because we have egos here in Alcoholics Anonymous. She didn't like not being good at something. I totally relate. But on their break, like, I was like, can I bang the drums? I've always always wanted to. Like, I dated drummers, but I never actually did anything. So I got on the drums, and because I'm a dancer, and, like, I don't know why, but it flowed. It felt so good. And they were like, who is that? That's not, Lori's in the bathroom. Who's that on the drums? And she came out of the bathroom. She's like, oh, that's Bex. Do you want her to drum? Because she wanted to quit so bad. And so I got in this sober band at, like, 14 days sober, and like I played at bars where I was 86 from, because it was so rad. Like, my life got turned full circle. But while I was having fun in sobriety as a young person, when I came home, because I was still so lonely, because I still had that sickness inside me, because I was still thinking that you're different from me and you're out to get me, and I'm still a skeptic at heart, I had the time in between those meetings, because I went to like 3 meetings a day for a really long time too. But I didn't know what to do in between those times, because I didn't have like a sober house or anything. I just had me. And so I was working the steps. I took it really serious. Oh, I should also tell the story about my sister. I'll make it quick. When I got out of treatment, my sister was living with my dad's, and I told her about alcoholism and that it's a disease, it's progressive, it gets worse, never better, it's threefold, it's a physical craving that once you put it in your body, you don't know if you're going to stop or you're going to keep going. For me, I didn't know if I was going to stop or keep going. Most of the time, I kept going. But then there's the mental obsession. That one is the one that I related to the most. Like, I just, because in AA, some people talk about how ashamed they were of things they did when they were drunk. And I had, like, a lot of things I was ashamed of that I did to get loaded. I did a lot of stuff when I was of sober mind. And I, like, had a lot of shame about that. But I realized that that's my alcoholism, too. Because I didn't have a choice. I loved the effect produced by whatever it was. Then I told her that. And then the spiritual malady, the, like, feeling separate from you guys and needing that connection and not knowing how to get it, because I had carried so much resentment around that it was my faith. My faith was, you are evil and you're out to get me. And I believed in that. I came here and learned that that's an old belief that I don't need anymore. It's not serving me anymore. So I told her about alcoholism, and she was like, oh my God, I think I'm an alcoholic. And I was like, no, girl, you're fine. I, like, because mine was so, like, I wore my alcoholism on my sleeve, like, literally track marks, like, you could see it. She was the Jekyll and Hyde. She hid it from me so well. And I think also because I'm really self-centered, like, I wasn't looking at her drinking. I was busy doing my own thing. And she was, like, obsessed with me just drinking. She's like, put that stuff away. We'll go out and we'll drink. It's fine. So it started to make sense. I was like, cool. She started to talk about how she drank behind, you know, she would be hanging out. And then she'd go somewhere in the kitchen and drink real quick and then come back out. And I was like, oh, yeah, that sounds like you might be alcoholic. So even though, like, I was terrible at it, I 12-stepped my sister without knowing it, because I told her about AA. And so I brought her to her first meeting, and it wasn't there. For some reason, it was canceled, and we were walking around looking like fresh newcomers, I'm sure. And this lady with, like, 4 ears came up and was like, you guys looking for a meeting? She could, like, smell it on us. And we were like, yeah. And she's like, I know of one. Get in the car. So she, like, brought us with her to a new meeting and was asking us questions about how long we'd been sober. And I talked about how I got busted the night, it was, like, after 2 a.m. I shot up, and it was the Labor Day. And my sister had gone to this Labor Day party that she was obsessed with me going to so I could just drink and be normal. And we both have the same day. Like, that's God to me. We both got clean and sober on the same day, completely separate, not planned. Yeah. So for like the first 10 years before she moved, we would give each other a cake. We were twins in sobriety. And that was like I remember a old timer coming up to me and saying, like, that is a cool story. Don't F it up. Yes. Only $3. And I think that I'm really, really lucky. Yes, I'm blessed, but I think also I'm really lucky that I had such importance on my sobriety date. Like, I just wanted to keep it. And I also had a really healthy fear of my alcoholism. And so I started working my steps with a sponsor, because that's what they say. And I respect Alcoholics Anonymous. I do what you tell me. I was willing, like the dying could be. And I also learned a little bit in treatment about, like, not being a weed. Like, you come to the meeting, you sit down. You go to the bathroom before. so that you can come and not be a distraction if you get up and go do something, or you don't talk to the person next to you. There's could be a newcomer behind you that needs their life saved. And if you think chatting with your friend is important, more important, that's an ego. That's our alcoholism. And I learned like to have a respect for Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I started working my steps, and I'd like get home and be like, hey, I'm on step four. What step are you on? Like, it was like a healthy competition, but it really helped me get through my steps. And I think it also helped my sister, because she was like kind of on my coattails for a while. It took her a long time to accept her alcoholism fully. But luckily she did, and she's still sober today. So we like, you know, call each other. Like, September 4th, I just turned 18, and we called each other and wished each other a happy birthday. It's such a blessing to have that shared with her. So it almost did feel like a recovery home. Like, my sister was literally, you know, with me in the journey. And so the first step was easy for me, because I already got it. I got it because I was detoxing so hard in that 1111 Island, and they were so nice to me. I don't know why, because like they had all these rules, like you can only take a 15-minute shower from 7 a.m. to 11, and they were like, oh, you're kicking heroin, you can shower as long as you want, girl, because it hurts. And they were just so nice to me, and they knew I couldn't sleep, so to either help me get to sleep or just to pass the time, I would read the Big Book. Like 3 a.m. in the morning, like I would read the Big Book. And so I learned a lot. I related a lot. Some of it I was like, oh, such old school crap. But I was just so desperate. And so the first step was really easy, especially because they shared about accepting it. Yeah, I can admit it. Like, I went to meetings when I was 19. I got court ordered because I got pulled over and I had paraphernalia. And I had just started my journey. I was not ready yet. I like think I went to a other meeting, and there was like a different kind of meeting, and there was like, and I lived in the hood, so it was a hood meeting, and there was like 12 teeth collectively in the room. I could not relate. I was like, oh, I'm not there yet. That was not a yet I even wanted to imagine I'd have. So probably would have, because I had a chunk of my tooth come out in sobriety. But so anyway, first step, I got. We moved on. You still got on that one. And then the second step was beautiful, because I related to that page that says, deep down within every man, woman, and child, there's the fundamental idea of God. And I had that when I was little. I would talk to God. I had a personal relationship. Thank God my mom brought me up in such an open-minded, like, loving, I mean, she also made me go to church, and I didn't like that. But I had a personal God. And when I was using and drinking, I didn't want anything to do with that God, because I wasn't doing stuff that I knew God would be like pleased with. So I was like, I don't want to really mess with you right now. I'm just going to pretend you don't exist. That's the easiest thing to do. And then when I got sober, the third step, I had to let go of some old beliefs. I was really scared of the old religious things that I couldn't make peace with. And so I went to the library and I looked at a children's section. I looked at the world religions, because I was like, I'm just going to pick one. I'll read about them and see. And I noticed a common thread. They're all talking about the same principles. And I could just let go of the judgment of which one is the right one. So I'm like pretty spiritually fluid. Like, I say God, it's easier. But thank God for that, because I'll get to this in a minute, but like, I've had to redefine some what God's job is and what my job is, because stuff went down. But anyway, so that third step did it. It's also easier when you're new and you're desperate and you have nothing to lose to surrender. It's harder when you get stuff to keep surrendering your will. Like, I'm in my will so bad right now, but thank you for letting me be up here, because it's really helpful. So I did my fourth. I was really scared of the work. I was really scared of doing it wrong, because I didn't want to waste my time. I hate homework. I hate writing. I hate all of that. Not necessarily like I was afraid of going deep, because the first one was really just mechanical. So I did a fifth, and everyone was like, oh, how do you feel? And I was like, I feel the same. Like, I'm fine. But I will say, I had my spiritual experience on the third step, on the third day of my sobriety in that treatment center. It was hard, like hard tile floor, in that place, and I remember like listening to the AA people, and they were the dude that was my yet. He shared about his sponsor telling him to put the shoes under the bed so that it would remind him to get on his knees in the morning and pray. And I was like, oh, I should do that praying thing. Like, all right. And they said like what to pray for. Thank God, because I wouldn't know what to pray for. So they said, ask God to remove the obsession to drink and use. And so my first experience in recovery with God is getting on my knees and asking God to remove, like wholeheartedly asking God to remove the obsession to drink and use. And I felt that weight on my chest lifted. Like I physically, spiritually, emotionally, mentally, I felt it. It was palpable. And I just had this knowing implanted in me that I was going to be okay if I stuck around here. And then I went to meetings and they started talking about steps and I was like, but I'm good. Like, I'm good. I felt God. I'm good. And they were like, we forget. We are alcoholics and we have forgetters and we also have things that block us. And if you don't know what those things are, there will come a day again where you will want to drink. And that terrified me. And so I did the fourth step. It was like very remedial. Shared it with my sponsor who was great. She was like my AA kindergarten teacher. She taught me the basics. And I did that. And then I went home for the hour. I'm real fidgety. I'm actually so much more relaxed than I was. So an hour was a lot to ask. Like, it was a lot. I don't remember if I did it or not. I mean, I remember attempting. So, and that's the beauty of the steps, is that you only have to do the first step perfectly. Because in my 18 years, I have continually worked the steps. In this program, in another program, I have outside issues kicking my butt right now. But I know how to stay sober. And it's not me. Like, I know that I need to get my butt to meetings. I know that I need to continually stay in the book, work with others. My sponsee's here tonight. I want to welcome the deaf community. It's really good to see you guys. And I also, seventh was rad because I realized something that I didn't know before, is that I'm special, but I'm not that special. And that's like the seventh step to me in like wrapped up in a bow. I'm special, but so is everybody else. And that's me becoming right size. And it was really helpful to do the fourth step because like people that were monsters became just like me. And people who I thought were like, oh, I need to like, you know, fix my mom. Nah, she has her own choices that she made. Took me a long time for that one. But that brings me to step 8 and 9, which was the amends. And the amends steps were incredible for me the first time because do I have to be done?
You got 12 minutes.
Tight. Okay, so I did my 8 and 9, and I remember the first person on my ninth step that I wanted to get out of was my stepdad. Like, he was like the safe person for me to resent, even though I had so much resentment towards my mom I didn't even know was there for like years into my sobriety. But I needed to get the one towards my stepdad out because it was the one that was killing me since I was 9. So my sponsor was like, I don't know if you should do that one first. And I mean, I don't always listen to my sponsor. I was like, no, I need to do it first. So when we were doing our third step, we were talking about like, oh, like you need to learn how to meditate because that's how you hear what God has to say. You can pray all day, but that's like ego if you're not listening for the answer. So I had to like picture my happy place, and I was like, okay, I think it's a waterfall, but like a cave behind it so that I'm like protected, but it's not like a wall, like it's like water and nature, but I don't want to be alone, so there's like a frog. Like, I had a whole picture. And she was like, cool, when you start making your amends, you might be surprised if you see frogs. And I was like, we're in San Diego, I'm not going to see frogs, thank you. And I thought she was crazy. So I went to my mom's house to make the amends to my stepdad and my mom, and like, I didn't even really feel that free because he didn't own none of his stuff, but that's, I mean, sick person. So, but my mom, after I made amends to her, and we have had several since then in like deep talks, which are great. She was like, oh, you left this jewelry box. Let me go get it. It has like some necklaces in it. And she pulled out this necklace, and it was like some necklace I got as a gift that I never wore, but it was like a crystal heart with a freaking frog in it, you guys. And I was like, okay, God, thanks. Like, how do you explain that? It's you know, God is a five, coincidence is a five syllable word for God. And it just was like that. It felt like God had my back through this whole process. 10, 11, and 12, I have come to appreciate more now than ever before, because with sobriety, what it's like now, I've been a dancer. I got to actually switch dance companies because, you know, before I had ego, I just wanted to be a star, and then that company wasn't really feeding my soul. I quit. I think she fired me. Whatever. She did this thing that was shady, and I was like, I'm not going to stay. So I went to this other company, and they had a complete different take on it. They were like social activism group that was performing, taking outreach classes to places like foster care units and like places where I connected with the kids like no one else could. Maybe a couple people, but like that was my strength. They were like, oh, it's a hood school, send Bex. And like I would like gain their trust in like a week. And they'd be like, how'd you get so many kids to the show? I was like, I don't know, I just do me. It was just in me. Like, it was just in me, and it was in my experience as a kid who had a past that was like theirs. And the combining a higher purpose with my passion was like, I was on a pink cloud for like the first, I don't know, 13 years of my recovery. And then the doors closed, and I had to reinvent my life. So I feel like I've had like not four lives. One, when I got sober. Two, when my dance company closed the doors and I had to reinvent myself. I decided I would go back to school, and I finished school, which is a rad thing to say, because I think the last time I spoke, I forgot to mention that detail. ADD. But and the amazing thing is that my dad died while I was in school, and I finished anyway. That was the hardest thing I had to do. And the blessing is that I was fighting graduating. Like, I was fighting this one class I didn't want to take. I felt overwhelmed. I was like, I need to grieve. Like, I did all this work to try and withdraw. It's really hard now to withdraw because I beat the deadline. And the lady was like, good news is they're approving your withdrawal, because I sent, like, the funeral and all that, like, to prove, like, I can't handle this. And she said, but you actually do need those units to graduate. We can let you walk on the date, but you won't graduate. Like, you'll have to take the class in the summer. And my sponsor was like, what's going to bring you peace? She always knows exactly what to say. And I prayed on it, and it was exactly what I did not want to hear. I need to finish that class. And I was, like, not doing any work. Like, I didn't have an F, like a 40. I had, like, a zero. And I worked my butt off. I went to, like, teacher hours and talked to her and did extra stupid credit. And, like, I'm an overachiever. Like, I wanted to have straight A's. And I worked my butt off for, like, a B minus in that class. But I got a B minus, y'all. And I finished. And I got to graduate with everyone else that was walking. You know, like, that's a feeling I did not want to rob myself of. And the rad thing about that, this is another God shot for me, is that my graduation day was my dad's birthday. And so I got to give that gift to him. He was there. And he's always been a white bird, and so I put a white feather in my graduation cap, and I met the man I was going to marry a month before I graduated, and he's the one who thought of that. Like, this man is like all the good things of my dad, and I got to marry him. And when we were at the, well, it was at the beach, it was actually, we got married on the Sunset Cliffs, which is where my dad loved. It was my dad's favorite beach, so he was there. And this man's vows to me were, he said everything he appreciated about me, and it was all the stuff I learned from Alcoholics Anonymous. I would not have that man if it wasn't for my sobriety, because he, like, appreciated that I own my stuff and that I'm forgiving and some other stuff. I don't remember. It was a blur. But that man reminds me of everything good about my father. I wish they would have met. But I have a feeling that my dad has something to do with me meeting him. And today, I get, thank you, perfect. What it's like now in 5 minutes is that it's real. It's not perfect. I am going through the hardest time of my sobriety. I thought going to school through my dad's death was hard, but my wonderful marriage and my happy ending has flipped on its axis. Yeah, I'm going to go there. We got pregnant. The reason, I should back up. The reason that we fell in love in the first place is because our hearts match. I've always wanted to foster ever since I started teaching foster kids. Like, I fostered dogs, and then I was a failure and adopted them, but whatever. I got a couple homes. And then I've always worked with foster youth, and I've always wanted to bring them home. Like, it was real frustrating to leave them in a group home where, like, the sickness is everywhere, and so it just escalates. How can you imagine? It's like a recovery home. But as for kids, they don't have any power over that. And I always, even when I was a kid, I was like, I want to adopt, because people in China give away baby girls because they can only have one kid and they want a boy. And I just thought, I just hated injustice ever since I was little, and I was like, I'm going to adopt. And then I grew up and was like, oh, that's really expensive. I'm a foster. So I wanted to foster, and this man has fostered before and is like, let's do it. So we were like all gung-ho about that, and then I got pregnant, and it, like, we got super excited, and then I lost it, and I did what every good AAer does. I like upped my meetings. I just like, that's okay, we're gonna keep going, I'm gonna stay positive. And then we had another loss, and that second loss whooped my spiritual behind, because all of a sudden that God that has been with me is doing stuff to me that I don't even understand. Like, I was good to just foster. Why are you going to put this desire in my heart just to rip it away? So I had to redefine God in my sobriety. God doesn't do that to people. He doesn't kill babies, I don't think. And maybe you do, and that's okay. Just don't come up to me after the meeting and tell me some stuff. I don't want to hear it. But We're still trying, and it has been a roller coaster, and I have developed outside issues because it is so much to handle. But you know what? I have never stopped working a program. In fact, I work a harder program now because I know, looking back at all the times I've gone through something hard, I'll get through it, and I'll be okay as long as I stay sober and I do all of the things that I need to do to stay sober, because I can't do it by myself. I have to be more active. I have a home group. I have a commitment. Thank you. I have a sponsor. I have a sponsor in two programs because I graduated. You know what you get when you peel an onion? You know how you have to peel an onion here? When you get to the end of the onion, you get another effing onion. It does not stop. So I have two onions. I'm working on both of them. And I have so many blessings that, like, I just can't access gratitude for right now, but I'm getting there. I'm getting closer. And I'm seeking outside help. I'm trying to go to therapy. It's like I'm doing everything I know to do because of AA. AA taught me what to do. And I know I'll get through it, and I'm going to stay sober through it. And hopefully I'm walking through it with a little bit of grace. It doesn't always feel like it, especially because I love to beat myself up. But that's the blessing of being around these rooms. And I'll say one more thing because I have 1 minute. I just got a phone call from Boise, Idaho, where my sister lives. They want to fly, because I still teach dance. I graduated. My husband was like, you want to do what you love? Keep doing it. I have a good job. So I got to still do what I love. Because I only went to school so I could be self-supporting and not, like, rely on a man like my mom did, because I never want to be like that. And then I met him the month before I graduated, and I don't even know my degree. But whatever. I use it. But I got a call from Boise, and they said, we want to fly you out to teach at a dance teacher's convention, 3 classes to a bunch of kids. We'll pay you this much money, and we'll fly you out and fly you back. So I get to go see my sister for free. And this is the only thing right now that is, like, giving me that trust back in God. Like, little pieces, I'm getting that trust back. Because I know my will, my good ideas, my, like, I need a kid right now, maybe it's not time. And maybe the fostering is the only thing I do, and I'll get it, and that's okay. And maybe this is what I needed to go through to have compassion for some other people, because I never had compassion for people who lost a parent until I lost a parent. I didn't know. I mean, I tried, but I am so grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous for giving me a full and wonderful life where I can be happy, joyous, and free, and sad at the same time. Because it's real. Life is real. And I'm just so grateful that I found a place where I get to be real. Because when I was in my family, I didn't get to be real. And it has given me more than I can express. And I'm so grateful that this has shifted my feelings tonight. And I keep talking, but I'm just really grateful for you guys. Thank you for my sobriety.